Session number 8227.
Brigadier Rackham, tape 5. Did you ever meet Sir Ian Hamilton? Did you ever see him?
Oh, I saw him, yes, but of course we just... he came and went around our reserve trenches, reserve, when we were in reserve, but I mean, I didn't have anything to say to him.
What did he look like when he marched around your reserve? Was he always very well turned out, you know, despite...
No, rather scruffy. No,
was
rather, he? Rather scruffy, unlike some others.
I was wondering about spit and polish, you know, how much emphasis you put on it in those situations.
Not much spit and polish, as you as known as spit and polish, but great attention to cleanliness, and you know, always frightened of an epidemic under those conditions.
Was it difficult, though, to keep your standards up regarding hygiene?
Oh, it was difficult, yes, but it was done.
For instance, how about shaving? Did you all... I know in the Navy that one is allowed to have a moustache and a beard,
yes.
A full set.
Yes.
I don't know how many of you had that then. But those
some grew beards, yes. But we managed to shave.
Were there rules about it? You know, did you expect your men to be clean-shaven if they were supposed to be?
Well, unless they grew a beard, they were allowed to grow a beard. Now, I could expand on beards, if you like, a bit.
Yes, please. We're very interested
well,
in this.
Well, there was one officer who grew a beard called Codner. When he went to France, he still got a beard, and he was in the Hawk Battalion. And our divisional commander of Royal Marine, General Paris, was... wounded on the Somme, and his staff officer killed, and they put in an army officer, and called General Shute, which we resented very much. We thought we ought to have a Royal Marine, but he was furious to see Codner having a beard, have it off. And so that was resisted, and he didn't have it off. But of course, A.P. Herbert got hold of it, and the result is that in The Bomber Gypsy, which is a collection of his poems, you will see The Ballad of Codson's Beard. And there's a poem about Codson and the general and the beard.
How did you cope with water while you were on the peninsula, you know, for drinking as well as washing? Were you always well supplied?
Oh, well, no, water was very short, you used to have to come up, you see, be brought up from the beach and brought over from Mudros. We were severely rationed with it, but there was just enough to keep going.
Were you ever deprived of water at any time? Can you ever remember being
not seriously,
very desperate?
No, not seriously.
It was good water, was it? You could drink it straight away without boiling.
Yes.
Could you ever have a bath apart from going in the sea?
No.
How frequently did you bathe when you were back at reserve?
Well, we expected to bathe at least once each time we were in reserve.
Was that ever hazardous, bathing in the sea?
No, not really.
Was it pleasant bathing during the hot weather?
Very, very great relief.
I suppose when the weather deteriorated, that stopped,
oh,
did it?
Oh, yes.
What did you mainly eat? You have described very briefly your liquid bully beef in the hot weather. Did you ever get fresh food at all? Was there any chance of getting an orange or apple or vegetables?
We got oranges and that sort of thing sometimes, very rarely, but no fresh vegetables, anything fresh at all, no meat, no fresh meat.
So what did you live on? What were the sort of meals you had, apart from your bully beef?
Bully beef and plum and apple jam.
Was that Tickler's jam?
Interminably, plum and apple, yes. And, of course, sometimes we got bread, but normally it was hard biscuits.
Was that very monotonous, the diet?
Yes.
Would you have had chocolate given you at any stage from your parcels?
No sort of ration of chocolates, no. But there was a canteen down on the beaches where you could sometimes get a little chocolate and that sort of thing, and a few luxuries, and a certain amount of drink. In fact, in the end, I was sent down with a working party to the beach to destroy all the liquor in case the soldiers ran, you know, we didn't know what was going to happen, evacuation, and all the liquor was destroyed.
Is that so?
Yes.
How was that done? How did you... Did you pour it away?
Yeah, just broke up the bottles and it all ran down.
When you were in reserve, how did you amuse yourself? Were there any recreations at all?
There weren't really, no, but we used to sort of organise a sing-song and that sort of thing. But we weren't allowed to congregate in too big of numbers.
There were rules against that, were there?
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes. What was behind the reasoning for this lack of congregation?
Well, because it attracted the shelling. You see, the Turks could see what was going on right back to the beaches, except just down the bottom of the cliffs.
You were always in their sights, you felt?
Oh, yes.
That must have been an eerie feeling, wasn't it, to know that you were always being watched?
Got used to it, you know.
Did you have any problems with the men because of the lack of women on the peninsula? No, was this... did you have any noticeable problems?
Well, I had no problems, no, with them, really, but it was always there. One loved to think of being among... ladies again, but it was just one of those things again which was accepted.
You mentioned earlier the wounded, you know, that often you had very heavy casualties regarding wounded. Mm. What sort of medical care would have been available for them immediately? Say you were in the front line and you had a number of wounded. What could you have done for those wounded people?
Well, the stretcher bearers would take them away, probably first to the regimental aid post, where our own doctor would be. He would do what he could, and then they would go down to a field dressing, down all these big communication trenches. If they were walking wounded, they would walk. If they were stretcher cases, they would go down on a stretcher. And then there would be a field dressing station on the beach. And from there, they would be evacuated to a hospital ship, which would come up at night.
So would you say the system of caring for wounded was adequate from what you witnessed?
It was adequate in my time, because there was no general offensive. But when there was a general offensive and there were enormous number of casualties, it was beyond, there was terrible suffering. But, I'm not blaming the authorities for that. It was just beyond their possibility to cope with the numbers at once.
You heard stories about these sufferings, did you? Of the wounded?
I heard stories, yes.
But you didn't actually see much yourself while
no,
you were...
No, the casualties were such that it was never overwhelming. But of course we never knew what was going to happen on the evacuation.
No, perhaps we could go on now to the evacuation. Did you hear about the evacuation from Suvla?
Oh, yes.
Did you know about that before it happened, that it was going to happen?
Yes, we knew it was going to happen. We didn't know when.
And you heard news when it was effectively done?
Oh, yes. Achieved. Oh, yes, we heard that, yes.
You were saying earlier that this had an influence on your morale. People became a little more anxious at that time, which is very understandable, I think. Did you feel that much more vulnerable after the other forces had been evacuated?
Oh, yes, we did, you see, because all the Anzac Turks were then available to come down to Helles.
And perhaps, did you feel that they were expecting you to be evacuated and therefore preparing an attack? Were you frightened
yes,
of that?
Yes, we were.
So, what actually happened after the evacuation of Suvla and Anzac? No, did you have reinforcements at Helles?
No.
Or extra precautions?
No. Oh, we had extra precautions, yes. The front line was manned more strongly than that. But we did expect an attack, but it didn't actually materialise, although the shelling increased considerably.
Did the atmosphere change in your trenches then, in Helles, after the evacuation?
Did
the atmosphere change quite a lot, would you say, once the evacuation...
Beyond apprehension as to what was going to happen, no. There was an order sent round to say that, I forget what now, 8th Corps, I think we were, 8th Corps was going to be relieved by another corps. I don't know whether that was sent round as propaganda for the Turks or what it was, but it didn't impress us. We knew perfectly well there was no sign of us being relieved.
Did you see yourself any evidence of the other evacuation? Was there any sort of increase in activity in shipping off Helles or decrease
no,
in shipping?
No, not noticeable, because it was all done at night.
So when did you hear, first of all, that you were going to be evacuated in January? Can you remember how much notice you got about this?
Well, I think the signs were so obvious that we were told about 10 days before, I should think.
And what plans were then made? For instance, was there great secrecy about this evacuation?
Well, there was supposed to be, but everybody knew it was coming eventually, but whether it was known outside, I don't know.
Did you think of many devices of deception so that the Turks wouldn't know that you were going to evacuate? Did you deceive them in any way?
Oh, yes. Well, I don't know whether we deceived them. We tried to. There were all sorts of rifles set up that were going to fire at certain intervals and so that they would think the trench was manned and that. And we very lights were very much thing, you know, these things you put up at night to show up the ground. The old pistols were put up so that very lights would keep going up. Of course, all sorts of booby traps were set so that when they came in the trenches, they would explode.
What sort of booby traps were set up? Can you remember any particular ones?
Jammed tin bombs, as we called them. They were old jammed tins filled with gunpowder and so on. And they had a switch put on, you see, so when you stood on the wire, the bomb would go off. But they weren't all that effective, of course. They were filled with gunpowder and any old bits of metal we could find about, which were plenty, of course, splinters from shells and things like that. But I don't know whether the Turks were caught out on, I shouldn't think so much. Activity at the back was encouraged in daytime, you know, to show we were still there in strength.
Yes, how about your front line? Did you try to give the impression, once you were sort of thinning it, that you still had the same number of troops there?
Oh, yes, yes.
How did you do that? How did you manage that?
Well, now, we were in the front line, but we came out of the front line about 4 days before the actual evacuation. And our task in the end was to hold the cliffs, the very last line. You see, we didn't know then. We thought, well, the Turks must know that we're going, because there were all the signs of it. But somehow they didn't. Our task was to hold, if they had have come through, to hold the last line just above the cliffs.
How did you feel about that?
We thought we might be in for a very sticky time.
Did you dig trenches there?
Did what?
Did you dig trenches on the cliffs where you were?
Well, there were some old trenches, you see, from the old times, the landing times. But they were in a terrible state, of course, then. We did a bit to renovate them so that we could stand in them and fire. But they were nothing like they ought to have been. But they were something. They were cover. I imagine some of them were the old Turkish trenches.
Do you remember the evacuation clearly when it happened? Was it on January the... What date was it?
January 8th, 9th.
Could you describe what you saw, what you remember of that, in detail, if possible?
In the first place, we were all, of course, very excited about it, but also very apprehensive as to what might happen. The general estimate has been at least 50% casualties. But of course, it was a time of high tension the last night, but nothing did happen. The Turks didn't seem, either didn't want to or they didn't know. The only thing that happened was that old Asiatic Annies opened up, and there were quite a number of shells fell on the beaches and did quite a bit of damage. But otherwise, there were really no casualties at all. And in the end, the troops from the front line kept coming through and through and through and going off. And in the end, we began to sing out ourselves, you see, in the early morning.
What was the method of departure, the system of evacuation?
Well, as far as we were concerned, we were up at, I think I came off at W Beach, and they rang and they had these old lighters, one or two lighters, called Beetles, and we got into them, and then went out to, well, I went out to a destroyer and got on the destroyer.
Would you have been one of the last to leave the peninsula?
Well, I think about 1,000 people claim they were the last one off. I don't. But I was fairly near the end, that's all I can say.
What was the scene that you saw on leaving the peninsula? Can you remember? Would it have been in the
evening?
No,
it was dark. It was dark.
The evacuation took place in the dark,
oh,
did
yes,
it?
Oh, yes, yes, in the dark. Otherwise it would have been terrible slaughter.
Yeah.
The saving grace was that the sea was very calm, and so it was comparatively easy to embark, but it did get up just as we were coming off, and it was quite a ticklish business to get off these lighters and up the rope ladders onto the destroyer.
So would it have taken place during the night of the 8th of December?
8th, 9th, yes.
And the morning of the 9th, am I right in thinking that?
The morning of the 9th. Well, it took place, of course, all during the night of the 8th and the morning of the 9th. But it was completed before daylight.
Would you say the organisation was very good for the evacuation?
Well, yes, I think it was really marvellous, because what it would have been like if we'd had to fight for it, I don't know. But it was an operation of war that so seldom happens, because it went exactly according to plan.
What did you leave behind on Helles, you know, particularly the W Beach, the one you vacated? Were there any stores or equipment left?
Oh, yes, no, in. And worse still, the horses, the mules.
No chance of getting that off, I suppose,
no,
was
no,
there?
No.
Did you destroy as much as possible?
Yes, we did. Some guns were left, of course, the last guns, and that they were destroyed. And of course, as soon as we came off, they had soaked a lot of the stores in petrol, and then they fired it as soon as we'd come off. It was an extraordinary sight to see all the fires on the beaches and just above the beaches.
That was when you were all safely aboard the boats,
we
is that right?
We were aboard, yes, yes. How that was done, I don't quite know, but anyhow, it's what they did.
Do you find it surprising, really, that it was achieved so successfully, the evacuation?
Incredible. Incredible. And so did all the generals. The lowest estimate was 50% casualties, you see, because they knew that Suvla had gone, and all the forces from Suvla and Anzac were available, and you would have thought they would have been on the extreme alert to know when we were going, if at all.
Particularly since they had this very good view of you in the daylight that you've described,
yes,
so graphically,
yes,
over this,
yes,
great saucer.
Yes, well, I think it was a marvel of organisation to keep it all under cover of darkness.
And also, I suppose, to keep the activity level going during the daylight, so
yes,
that they would still think people were there.
Yes, oh yes.
You tried to keep a normal sort of appearance, did you, during, right up to the last?
We tried to, yes, and we were told to move about more than usual in daylight, so that they would see movement.
Was anything learned about that afterwards? You've spoken about your meetings with various Turks. Did you ever find out whether they were surprised, or whether you were allowed to get away?
Oh, I think they were, according to all their reports, they were just completely surprised.
Despite the fact that Suvla and Anzac had
been
evacuated?
Well, yes, I think they had an inkling that we were going, but they didn't seem to be able to appreciate when. And they didn't really make the efforts which I think we would have made to find out. You know, they didn't carry out any raids or anything like that to ascertain what was going on in our trenches.
How much German influence was there at that time on the peninsula, do you think? Were there any German personnel about in the Turkish trenches?
Not in any great numbers, but of course the commander-in-chief was a German, Lehmann von Sanders, and there were other Germans. Well, you might almost, other than Mustafa Kemal, the hero of the opposition at Suvla, was a German. Major, I forget his name now.
How did you feel about leaving Gallipoli? What were your feelings? Can you remember?
Mainly that we'd let all those who were left behind down. All the people being killed. And that we had failed to get through.
Were you pleased?
But tremendous relief that it had gone off without enormous casualties. Tremendous relief.
Were the Royal Navy divisions, were your losses very great on the peninsula in all?
Very what?
Were your losses very great, the Royal Naval Division?
Oh, terrible, yes. In the early battles. As Arthur Watts will tell you more about that, his battalion was destroyed.
Which battalion was that?
Collingwood.
Where was that destroyed?
On the 4th of June, in one of these trench-drench attacks, a general attack right across the peninsula.
Your own draft, the one you took out to Gallipoli in September, how many of you survived? Can you remember approximately?
Oh, I should think 75% of them probably. When I say survived, they, 25% that were lost weren't killed, all killed, but they were wounded. They weren't there at the evacuation. We lost quite a number in this very intensive bombardment when we were in the front line. We thought they were going to attack then, but they didn't.
How long did that take place, this very intensive? You know, what sort of duration?
About a couple of hours.
Was that the first real bombardment you'd been in?
No, not really, but it was the most intense that I experienced. They'd got all the guns down from Anzac and Thule, you see, as well as the ones that were covering helis.
Do you think the Turks should have pushed on then, looking at it from their point of view, once the evacuation had occurred from Suvla and Anzac? Could they have overwhelmed the Allied forces?
Well, we hope they wouldn't have overwhelmed us. We hope we should have held them off, but it would have been a bloody battle.
What happened to you when you left Gallipoli? Where were you taken?
When we left Gallipoli, we were taken to Mudros and put on shore there in very uncomfortable conditions. And when all the army had left and most of the ships, we were then transported to Imbros, which is an island 5 or 6 miles to the west of the peninsula, where Ian Hamilton's headquarters was.